Blog Talk Radio.
My one and only true love, Princess Peach.
Peach, you're so cool. And with my star, we're gonna rule. Peach, understand, I'm gonna love you till the very end. Donkey Kong too. A thousand troops of Koopas couldn't keep me from you. Princess Peach, at the end of the line, I'll make you mine.
Peaches, 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 peaches,
love really makes a guy come out of his shell.
Welcome to another edition of Archivist's Bets on Sexy Witches, a podcast from the Geek Girls' perspective. And I am the head hauntress, and it is June. Usually on our June episode, I play, June is busting out all over. But there was something I had to absolutely acknowledge before we get into our summer preview Pride Month episode. And the first bona fide hit of 2023 is the animated film Super Mario Brothers, which is aimed at the tweeners and the teenagers. And it made a fuck ton of money. As of yesterday, its gross is $570.5 million in the United States and Canada. It's $753 million in other territories, and it's already crossed worldwide $1.3 billion. So it is ridiculously huge. But the coolest part isn't the movie. The movie, it's cute. My evil genius thought. What's really cool about it is that song was Peaches. That song is sung by my favorite guy in the whole world, even though Nathan and I fight about this all the time, Jack Black from Tenacious D.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did much more than, you know, I actually love Jack Black from Mr. Show and Tenacious D more than his acting career, even though I absolutely love High Fidelity. It's one of my favorite movies. Walking on Sunshine will always be equated with him because of that movie. But this is the first time that Jack Black has been in the Hot 100. With that song. And it's already listed on the long list for the Oscars next year. Congratulations, Jack Black. And finally, so like he's had his first mainstream hit, and it's like pages. Oh, well, you know. No accounting for taste. Teenagers will love, but they all love that song. So we're very happy for Jack Black. And, you know,
Oscar for that song.
Yeah, I'm serious. Like, it's not just a little buzz, right? It's some big ass buzz for Oscar.
Yeah.
If
Blaine Canada could get nominated, why not?
I have no problems with it. I'm still mad that we never got to see him perform School of Rock on stage that year.
Yeah.
Like that song was not even nominated for Best Song. Oh, my God. Especially because if I remember right, I have to go back and look. The person who won wasn't so good. But I'll have to go back and look. I digress. But in the meantime, let's talk about we'll do a quick recap until about 9:30. And then at 9:30, our guest calls in. She's been on the show before. She's a horror host and drag queen out of, I believe it's North Grand Forks, North Dakota. So she's really the only game in town, which is kind of amazing. And Grand Forks is, I've actually lived in Grand Forks. So I know what she's dealing with. And Janessa J. Champagne, she'll be on at 9:30 talking about Pride, talking about summer,
nice,
talking about horror, all those things that she loves. And I'm sure, because we are wrapping up towards Halloween already on this show, because we always do, I'm sure she'll have some favorite vampire stuff to talk about, because I know she knows a lot about vampires. So that's all at 9:30. In the meantime, I'm going to introduce my sexy witches, and they're going to go and recap things they've watched and stuff, or anything they want to talk with about. I'm going to throw out first to my sexy witch, the Enchantress of Nevermore, Raven Jesper Hark. How you doing? You're from currently living in Los Angeles, but actually residing right now in the old school territories of Portland, Oregon, Pacific Northwest. How you doing? Welcome to the Sexy Witches.
Hey, back in my home base, I brought the 90-degree weather with me for a few days, but it's starting to cloud over again and go back to Portland normal.
Guys, so go ahead. First things first, we wanted to talk about passing that happened this morning, and I thought that you'd be a perfect person to talk about this. And then why don't you talk about anything you've been watching or stuff since our last episode, which was only 2 weeks ago, so we shouldn't have too much.
Yeah. So, this morning news broke that Treat Williams passed away in a motorcycle accident. And I don't think all the details are in yet. He was 71, I believe. And I don't know what most people would know, but my geek circle of friends first figured out Treat Williams existed because of the movie Hair. And Milos Forman is one of my favorite directors. So I definitely watched that one a lot. And then when I was in Durango at the theater that Aaron and I both worked at different times but never crossed paths.
Diamond Circle Theater at the Strader.
Yeah, but it wasn't that. It was the, by the time I got there, it was just like the Strader Theater, the Henry Strader Theater. So they changed it because we're trying to get rid of melodrama. But a movie was coming through called The Great Alaskan Race. And it's like the Balto story, but not the Balto dog. It's like a different dog that did more shit. And they needed a theater to show the newsreels of polio vaccine getting to Alaska. And so they scouted that theater. And I had to be the babysitter, basically. So I was there for 18 hours anyway every day when they were there. So they're like, you may as well just get in one of the seats. We're using your costumes, too, you know. Come on in. So not only me, but Buttons is in that movie too.
What?
Because he was sitting on my lap. I don't know if we're on screen, but Treat Williams was, you know, an actual actor in that movie. And although I didn't get to do actual work with him, I did get to see him, and he was, you know, hanging out in town. So it's hard to miss people in that town because there's really only one main street.
Yep.
And he was absolutely a treasure and just really humble and, like, didn't think he was famous kind of way.
He's one of those character actors that you're like, oh, him. Because he was in a lot of stuff, like things we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was going back over his catalog, and a lot of these are smaller parts, but, I mean, he's all over the place. His most famous, though, he was a lead in Everwood, which was a TV show, which I never really watched it, but it had a huge following like 2002 to 2026. But I know him for, he plays the lieutenant to, what's his name? Not Joe Pesci. What's the guy from the 80s? Dead Heat.
Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, Joe Piscopo in Dead Heat.
Dead Heat.
Yeah, he's in Dead Heat. And that's a pretty funny, I own a copy of Dead Heat. It's a very strange, cute little film. I have this box, a disc set of seven, and it's got mostly bad Jim Wazowski movies, but some of his best, like 9676 Evil 2, and it also has, what is it, Bud the Chud, and I think he directed that too, and Ghoulies 3 Goes to College is on there, and Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, by the way, is amazing.
That's a good movie.
He also was in a 1984 TV version of A Streetcar Named Desire as Stanley.
Wow.
And yeah, so if you're a theater geek, check that one out. He was actually really good. And then he was also in an episode of Fairy Tale Theater, but I don't remember the fairy tale.
He was also in an episode, and where I remember him best from, he was also in an episode of Tales from the Crypt.
Nice.
Where he played a con man who was trolling dating services for old wealthy widows. And it was a really good episode. I don't remember the name of it or anything, but that's where I remember him best.
It's called None But the Lonely Heart.
Okay.
Episode one.
Wow.
Excellent.
I mean, Aaron was telling me that he even touched into the Star Wars universe. He's a little bit of everything. So rest in peace, Mr. Treat Williams. I'm sorry you went out like that. At the same time, he's an action star. He went out with a bang.
If you're 71 and you go out in a motorcycle accident, I hate to see it. Anyone go out, but that's pretty badass.
Yeah, what a way to go.
Well, as long as he wasn't drinking.
Most 71-year-olds don't go out that cool.
And also he played himself on The Simpsons, and I think that's like a specific level of fame as well.
Yeah. I remember him best from Steven Spielberg's only flop movie, a comedy called 1941.
Oh, God.
I actually enjoy 1941. Yeah. a soldier who freaks out and wants to fight everyone and is insanely jealous and kind of starts everything rolling as far as the drama not involved with the Japanese invading. And he's brilliant. He's over the top and hilarious fun. And if you haven't seen 1941, there are a lot of good performances in it, not the least of which is John Belushi, who is somehow restrained and almost subtle. Treat Williams is fantastic in 1941.
I don't want to get too down rabbit hole here, but when I went on, like, the second or third time I went on the Universal Studio Tour, when they still actually did a studio tour, and you got out and you walked around the studio itself for a few minutes. They always had one set up. They had the Ferris wheel from 1941. You got to see it. So that wasn't my favorite thing I ever saw in that room. My favorite thing I ever saw in that room is they had the original spaceship from Flash Gordon, and it had it rigged so they could show what it looked like landing. That was cool.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. That was, remember back in the day, like, Aaron, like, when it was like that.
They still have new stuff all the time. In fact, when we get to Halloween, they're updating Nope. They had all the sets from Jupiter Land out, and you could walk around them last time. Well, they're upgrading it and you drive through it right now when you do the studio tour, but we've got new stuff coming for Halloween.
That's another. That's awesome because you know how much I love that movie. Let's hold that off. That's another conversation down the road. Let's stick to summer here and what we're doing next. Anything else you should tell us, Aaron? I'm sorry, Raven. Anything else you should tell us before we? Because I asked you to do Treat Williams. Is there anything else you briefly want to talk about before we move to Nathan? I'm going to do Nathan next. So,
yeah, one thing I watched that I recommend is on Max. It's so short. HBO Max. I still am calling it that. Anyway, a 6-episode series, true crime documentary called The Curious Case of Natalia Grace. And it is about a little person who was adopted from Ukraine. And allegedly was a 6 year old when adopted, but as happens sometimes in international adoption, it turns out maybe a few years were shaved off in order to get adopted. And also maybe she's already a 38-year-old woman.
So like orphan but real.
And might have been trying to murder her family. Or maybe
like
the family
orphan
was manipulating a child. Which one is it? I still really don't know. But it's a crazy documentary, and you should watch
Damn.
It.
He thought orphan was outlandish, but it sounds like it's true.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, so that's interesting. So, Nathan, we have a lot of stuff to talk about in the preview, but is there anything of note that we have watched in the last 2 weeks? Because we caught up with almost everything last episode that we should mention.
What, I don't get the whole spiel introduction?
Oh, because you could do your own. From Atlanta, Georgia, the voice of violence, my dirty southern sorcerer, Nathan Hamilton. Welcome. You're on with Sexy Witches.
Well,
how's
hello,
that?
Ladies, gentlemen, and everything in between. It's wonderful to be back here with you.
That's why he wanted you to tee him up.
Hey, I always do the introductions, so I figured this is the only place someone does one for me. So it works out well. I really have not watched a whole lot in the last couple of weeks. We have been busy readying the domicile here for the arrival of a certain evil genius for the summer.
Who arrives tomorrow.
Indeed. I did start, as of last night, watching the new season of Human Resources.
Nice.
Which one thing I can say about that show, as well as Big Mouth, it's a, for those not aware, it's a spinoff of Big Mouth. And it's rare you can get me to kind of go, wow, they went there? And I'm only two episodes in, and I've already said that a couple times.
Levy
showed me Human Resources. Maybe you should slow down and watch them with her.
However,
she likes. They made me sit through season one.
There's something that we did go to in person that I want to give a big, big plug for.
Okay.
In a place called Cherry Log, Georgia.
Yes.
Which there ain't shit in Cherry Log, Georgia, except the Southeast biggest Bigfoot Museum, Expedition Bigfoot.
Damn.
This place is fucking awesome. Like, I went in, I didn't expect much, and this place really impressed me, like, for real, because I expected some little – I've been to a skunk ape museum in the Everglades. I have been to different, you know, tourist traps based on cryptids. This is by far the biggest, most elaborate, like, best presentation I have seen of any of them. So if you are ever in the vicinity of Cherry Log, Georgia – everyone go see Expedition Bigfoot because it's the best. If you're a cryptid nerd, you will love this place. And it shares a parking lot with a pinball museum.
It had medieval madness.
Where for $5 you can go play all the pinball you want. So
except for they have medieval
area,
madness, you don't have to play any other machine if they have medieval madness.
Yep,
so.
and just down the road, probably about 20 minutes or so, there's a great barbecue place. So, Cherry Log, Georgia, man. Cryptids and pinball. That's all you need to know.
It sounds amazing.
The museum was set up very much like the Civil Rights Museum. That's what I walk it through. I was like, oh, my God, it's the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis with the timeline running through. They also did that in the last, like, museum I walked through was the World War II Museum in Louisiana in New Orleans. And, you walk through the timeline and they have all the video screens and then the like snapshots of covers of newspapers and sightings and they have like the trailer of Legend of Boggy Creek going on in Lupin One's corner, and then they have the like sounds that you can listen to them, like supposed recordings of Bigfoot. And so like there was one where they recorded them talking to each other, things like that.
Oh,
it's an $8 ticket. It was a lot of fun.
Pr- probably my two favorite things in there. Number one, they have this diorama set up. It's the inside of a cabin with, like, campers and flannel shirts holding the door shut while these two huge hairy arms come in. And they have a bank of headphones that you can put on and listen to this dramatic narration of the night that these campers encountered Bigfoot.
They were so scared.
Fucking amazing. It's so good. And then over in the screening room, kind of on the side where, you know, it's not really, you know, imposing or noticeable, they have a preserved Bigfoot turd.
And I did.
This place is fucking amazing.
Yeah, they have a close association with the Mothman Museum in Pleasantville,
yes.
West Virginia. There, it's all over the place there. So there's a lot of considerable Mothman presence in there, and a touch of Loch Ness, which I'd like a little bit more Loch. Nessie is one of my favorite cryptids, and I wish there was a little bit more. But other than that, it was a lot of fun.
Their gift shop should probably join strip clubs and dealers' rooms at horror conventions as the place that I should not take my credit card into because I could go broke in there.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't want to. He kept putting down. It was a patch for his vest, and he kept putting it back down. I'm like, give me the damn patch, and I had to take it and buy it for him.
I told myself I was not going to buy anything in that gift shop because if I broke that seal. I was going to walk out of there with
the dam would break open.
Exactly. But yeah, Cherry Log, Georgia, Expedition Bigfoot Pinball Museum. Everybody go visit it. And while you're here, look us up because that's only about an hour and a half from us. So.
Yeah, it's not even that far. So I wanted to add Poker Face to the mix here. I have been watching that on Peacock.
Nice.
And I am a huge fan of Natasha Lyonne. Now, this is not nearly as innovative as Russian Doll is. I think Russian Doll is probably one of my favorite science fiction shows out there right now. This is good. And Natasha Lyonne knocks it out of the park as usual. Not every episode is great, but there are great episodes in there. And you see some really good cameos, guest stars from, you know, people like, oh, yeah, you know, kind of thing. And I just find her, I hate to say it, insanely hot.
I agree.
Yeah.
Why do you hate to say that?
Well, because I don't know if people might construe it as sexist or something because I have the hots for Natasha Lyonne. I mean, I respect her as an actress. She's a really good actress, but she's got this, like, Christian Bader later if she was a woman vibe about her, and I just so good. like Heather's era Christian Slater, right? Except for feminine.
Gotcha.
So I'm totally like cool with that. And she's really good. I mean, like Russian Dolls, if you haven't seen Russian Dolls, and I would hope that there's anybody out there listening to this, if you haven't seen Russian Dolls, come back to us, we'll be here. Go watch Russian Dolls. It's only two seasons. It's an easy burn. They're fantastic. Go watch that show. But anyway, so I wanted to mention I've been watching Poker Face, and I thought that was pretty cool. I haven't quite finished it, so if you guys have seen it, don't tell me the ending. I still have, like, two episodes left, and we're about to lose Peacock, so I got to get those last two in.
We did watch a new release called Influencer.
Which I barely remember anything about.
Which is a new one on Shudder, and it's fine. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It's a good. It's a movie.
It's a movie. It was fine. I mean, I barely remember anything about it. We've been cramming though, like the softcore Jess Franco movies lately. Oh my god! Dude, there's a lot of like. Lena Romaine's tits in all of these movies. It's too a distraction, I think. Hello, what's up? You know, it's like, she's beautiful, don't get me wrong. I just find it to be a little bit overload. Now, I know Nathan doesn't, like, I haven't told him that I find it overload to watch all these films back to back to back. But there is something you have to say about Jess Franco films, because even his really crappy ones has decent composition. He's got a good eye. He's clearly a gun for hire for a lot of these films and doesn't give a fuck about his content. But then again, he loves his wife and he shoots her in the best light possible. And so I give them credit for that as well.
I really want to take a bunch of people who complain about Rob Zombie putting Sherry Moon in all of his movies and just show them about 10 Jess Franco movies starring Lena Romay.
So,
yeah, complain about it now. the story behind that is last summer, Severn Films decided they were getting out of the DVD business, and they were going to go exclusively Blu-ray.
So much.
And they had a huge sale, and we're still getting through the stack of movies that I bought during that last summer, and a whole lot of them were just Franco flicks. So.
Yup.
I watched so many Jess Franco movies last year for the madness. I think in 1 week I watched like 16 or something insane.
Wow.
And I think the same thing happened to me. Like it was the same week as the witchcraft movies. So I think something broke in me just permanently after that. But in a way, they remind me of each other, not only because I watch them at the same time, but it's like witchcraft aspires to be Jess Franco.
I would agree with that, actually.
It's funny. If you look at Jess Franco's movies, there are really two classifications. There are we are making this movie. We have the money to make this movie. And this movie is going to look amazing because he's got a great eye for composition. He always shoots in amazing locations. And then there's the classic Jess Franco movie that's, okay, we still have this location for 2 days.
I bet we can make
three more movies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I watched a couple of those. I definitely watched both kinds, and I noticed that as well. And I go, isn't that the same house? Isn't that the same fucking fence and outfit?
No,
right?
Can't
fault him for it.
Like,
Corman was famous
for
doing the same
thing.
I mean, but then you get a movie like Bloody Moon, which is fantastic, right? Which is a slasher film, absolutely great, you know. There's some in there. There's a couple of the video nasties he worked on, except for the cannibal movie. I forget the name. What was that? That's the Devil. The Devil Hunter. Don't like that one very much. But there's
that movie's terrible.
Some of his Babes in Prison movies are pretty good. So, there's that going on, too.
And writing a memorial for Jess Franco was how I got published in Fangoria. So here's to Jess Franco.
Here's to Jess Franco. All right. Then that's really, like, all the things that we have done we want to talk about. At this point, we're going to go ahead and start to switch conversations because I believe our guest is on the line, so I'm going to introduce this guest. I originally met this guest when they came to my panels at Days of the Dead Atlanta, mediated and hired by the son of Celluloid himself, Nathan Hamilton. So thank you. So you facilitated this meeting and this friendship and didn't know it. And they've been on the show before, usually around the madness, because they are a horror host. And we also have a mutual love of the Blu-ray Brothers, which I have to ask about the new season. And Victoria Black finally won. Oh, my God. Anyway, please welcome to the show one of my favorite people on the interwebs, Janessa J. Champagne. Welcome back. You're on on the set with the Sexy Witches. Woo!
Hello. Hello, hello.
Hello.
I'm so excited to be back.
Oh, thank you. I am so glad you said yes. And I wanted to do a summer and a Pride Month preview. And so I was like, I have that Janessa on in a minute. Let's call Janessa. And you said yes. And I said, thank you. So I'm so glad you're on. And how has your life been? We haven't really spoken since, I would say, right before COVID is the last time I saw you. Days of the Dead when the Boulay Brothers was there. That was a monumental Days of the Dead.
Yeah, the Boulay Brothers, that Days of the Dead, that was the last like big event that I did before the Pandy settled into town. So that was my big trip, and then we all hid away forever. Oh, it's been all right. Things have been a little crazy. I've been doing a lot of online stuff. I'm starting to venture out now again and do more live shows and live events, but have just been, I started a YouTube channel over the pandemic. I didn't want to learn how to make sourdough bread, so the other option was to have a YouTube channel, so I did that, and just kind of doing lots of online fun stuff and keeping on.
But I'm so glad that to hear that you're starting to venture back out. I'm actually, this summer is the first time where I've actually got a lot of things like already preset. So I understand what you're saying. All of a sudden there's concerts everywhere. Festivals are back. Cons are full blast. Like the con circuit's been going nuts. I do want to mention before we go any farther, one of my favorite people I met through the interweb, through these podcasts, a regular Spooky Empire, regular Madness, and we were friends in person. Dina Bina died of cancer 2 weeks ago. And make sure I mentioned that on the show because she was a huge supporter of this show. She actually had the moniker Oracle of Orlando because she covered our Halloween night stuff down there as well with her and Harriet Branch. So I'm going to miss her immensely. Fuck cancer again. This is the second one of my people.
I'll drink to that.
Yeah. I lost James the same way. It's rough, but at the same time, I'm so glad to know that even though there's still a lot of people, and COVID is an indirect reason of it because people that had cancer did not get treatments while it was going down, and she got diagnosed right in the middle of it. It was a rough go that last year for her, but I love her, and I hope everyone, and I hope her ferrets are doing well as well. We love ferrets, and she had so many ferrets. It was awesome. She'd always take pictures of them with Santa and Krampus every year. It was pretty awesome. But I didn't mean to be a downer, but it also, she was a regular Atlanta Days of the Dead. She actually came to my panels too. And I always appreciated you were at my panels. You were at my first panel. So thank you for that. You've always been a great supporter of me and my show. And I hope I can give you the support. And I'm one of your biggest cheerleaders. I always am. But first, I have to ask you, before we get into what the Pride Month, what did you think of Dragula Titans?
Oh, so I get the feeling that you're a Victoria Elizabeth Black fan, so this may be a bit of a hot take.
I know. I'll go ahead, because I actually was kind of – the ending was weird. Anyway, I'll give you mine, but yes, I've been a huge fan since
I
season two.
I feel like that's a whole lot of money and a whole lot of hoopla to put into, we just want to give this girl a crown, because I think that she to me was not the best of the whole season, and I think she's fine, but I think that there were other people who really excelled, and I think that I think that they're really still struggling a little bit to build stories around the people on the show. I think that's the one thing that Drag Race, in a way, has over the Boulay Brothers Dragula, is that as fake as it is and as much as it seems very contrived, I think that Drag Race does a better job of creating narratives around the people, and I think Dragula still struggles a little bit, and I wasn't really compelled by her, and I just felt there were people that had more. I was a Coco Kane girl. I was really hoping that she was going to pull it out, but it was so clear they just wanted to give a crown to Victoria Elizabeth Black.
I have no issues with Coco Kane also winning. And actually, honestly, Hoso is amazing. I think Hoso is a treasure, and we should – but I hated the drama. Like, there was – especially in that first half of the season. I mean, they always like a little drama. There's always, like, season three, they cried that entire season. And there's always a little drama, especially if Boria is around. There's going to be drama. And that's fine. But it just got so distracting, and I kind of agreed with Victoria about that. She kind of like went to the corner and just said, I'm going to make my costumes. And that's kind of how I felt. Like, duck. Hoso's wonderful. I wish Hoso had done something to stop all that. They kept going.
Yeah.
What? It's about me. It's about me. I was like, yes, it's about you. Jump in, get some agency, get these guys to calm down and make some art.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was. But, I think that that's really where I think that's why they struggle is because I think that again, one thing that Drag Race has done a little bit better job of is that we only really appreciate villains if there are also heroes. And so they haven't really been able – in season three, they had Landon Sider and they had Louisiana Purchase who were able to kind of become that a little bit. But in all the other series, they were like, oh, let's just take these people who are all kind of villains and stick them together. And it's not as fun. Mm. It's not as fun if there's no one to root for.
Now, that being said, the pro wrestling episode was great. I absolutely love that episode, you know, and it was fun to watch them learn how to wrestle and learn what a work is and then realize there's really not that much difference between – I've always said that, like, pro wrestling and drag are not that far apart. A lot of people think they are, but
so
they're
similar.
Not. So similar. It's, you know, it's amazing. Both things are amazing. That's always – go to – you know, matter of fact, I'm going to shout out. There's a group of people, I don't know if they're doing it this year. Do you know if No Peace Underground is doing their Pride Month show this year, Nathan?
I have not heard anything about one, but they tend to announce their shows last minute, so I'm not going to say one's not happening.
Okay, because the last 2 years, No Peace Underground is a wrestling promotion in Orlando. It's Orlando? It's in Florida. Mm-hmm. I know it's in Florida. They don't have a ring, but they've done an all LGBTQ deathmatch show 2 years in a row. What's the name of it again?
Cool.
Yeah. What was the name of it?
It's called Effie's Fear the Gay Agenda.
Fear of the Gay Agenda. It is great.
I love it.
And Effie is this huge star on the indie circuit, like huge star. And it makes me so happy because Effie makes everyone happy. Matter if Chris Jericho is in the, he's like, I want to see them wrestle. Like, that would be my dream match is to watch Chris Jericho and Effie go at it. So I think it would be
great. That would be something.
Yeah. Effie, I've seen Effie live. I've seen him on TV. Anyway, those shows are great. And if they're doing it, I highly recommend it. Go see an Effie no matter what he is. Effie is a star. So there's that always that going on in Pride Month. Let's see. Do you know of any cool events that we should, any of you, I'm going to throw it out not just to our lovely guest here, but anything we should be, I mean, the parades are almost always this weekend on the 16th or 17th, something around there. Like, this is the weekend usually that you have the big parades, except for Georgia. Georgia does their parade. What was it,
ours
October?
Is weird. It's in October. Yeah, it's always
October.
A couple of weeks before Halloween. So.
But, you know, everywhere else is wrapping it up. So, any of your any favorite early summer events do we like to go to in June?
Well, if anybody is around North Dakota, we have Bismarck Pride this weekend. We're going to have a good time. We've got our show this Saturday night, and
nice. You'll
get to see me get an award. I'm a champion of Pride this year.
Yeah, wow.
I guess if you,
congratulations.
I did. If you get death threats and don't actually die, then they're, like, obligated to give you a plaque. So it's been a weird year.
Really?
I don't want – was someone threatening your life, sir, ma'am?
Yes. So we – this last year has been very strange. I'm in a very red state. And so last year at Pride, we had a show on the steps of the North Dakota Capitol. I was the first drag performer ever to perform on the steps of the North Dakota Capitol, and we had a brunch and some other events, and we got some pretty serious death threats from some fundamentalist groups, and the FBI was called, and it was a whole thing. So it's been a little wild here the last year, but we are still kicking, we're still going, and we're not shutting down anytime soon.
No, it's been a rough year in general. You know, my evil genius, it came out as, gender fluid a couple years back. And Maryland's been actually pretty good, but they've been watching the television and they see all these, and the, especially the interwebs, they know these websites that I don't even know about that listed all these like laws and that are on bills and stuff being passed. And they're just, and they're 13, so they're freaking out a little bit about it, and it's like, ugh. And then of course Tennessee. If you want, I already have an idea what you, how you feel about Tennessee right now and what's going on there. But if you want to rant, you can do it. I give you the floor. I'll give you 5 minutes here.
I mean, it's just so ridiculous. It's so ridiculously stupid, because if you think about all of the ways that there has been drag performance in society, people are only upset about it if it's in the context of queer and trans spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, nobody was ever upset about Milton Berle. Nobody was calling him a groomer. You know, all of these different characters, Robin Williams and Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, Tu Wong Fu, all these kinds of things, like that was never the thing. And now they're just taking all of the sort of rhetoric that they used against gay and lesbian people in the 70s, and now they're just applying it to trans and non-binary people. So it's tired, it's old, it's the same stupid shit that we have to deal with. And it's just really, luckily we know how to fight it. We've been fighting it for so long that we just keep coming. And, you know, sometimes we show up to Pride with balloons, and sometimes we show up with bricks. So this year it's bricks.
I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 70s, early 80s. I have conscious memory of Harvey Milk's assassination. It's interesting to see the changes over the years and the positivity that happens, and then it suddenly like bend back, and I'm in like, huh? You know, like really question. You know, what's going on out there? I know that it's a lot of it is just for show, you know, but it doesn't matter if it's for show, because it's still hurting people. So fuck that. You know, a lot of this will go away on its own, I think, because they're on the wrong side of history. Simple as that. There's that going on. I went on a cruise ship once, and, you know, the staff always gets a show, right? And they always do it late night. So I figured, because they serve my ass all day, I'll go to their show, right? And the guys, the waiters, did this traditional dance, which is a comedy dance in the Philippines. And you know what it is? Bunch of guys in dresses with apples for boobs, and the boobs keep falling out, and they keep having to step them back in. That's the dance.
Yeah.
And they're doing a singing number. So, and literally they said that this is actually honestly a tradition going back hundreds of years, like this comedy bit. It's like, fuck that, guys, come on. We're it is old and tired. And the silver lining in the horrible things that I saw in the 80s with the AIDS epidemic, especially in 84, and then the 90s, of course, is that the one thing that they forget is that it organized a bunch of people who are now one of the strongest political forces behind the scenes in the world. And you know, that's right. This will pass, because there's a support network for people like my daughter out there, you know, which wasn't there before. So
yeah, exactly. And I think that another thing that's changed is that all that progress that we have has affected everyday people, because I think that, you know, it may feel very familiar. We're fighting all of these battles over again, but also we have public opinion on our side now that we didn't have the first time. Before, it was really kind of an uphill battle. And now there's so much more support and so much more, you know, in the general population of people just saying, why does this bother people? What is going on? And I think that it's going to be borne out that it is just a bunch of really loud but really small minority of people that are causing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like I said, they're on the wrong side of history. I even think they know it, like I said. You know, they're just trying to, you know, there's all, they can't really vilify immigrants anymore, even though they're still trying to do that. So they have to pick somebody else to vilify. You know, immigrants are so last administration, you know. Anyway, we're not going to talk politics. Nathan hates it when I talk politics. But still, fuck Tennessee and the drag queen rule, because that's just stupid. And I think they even know it's stupid. you know. And so Georgia, actually, yep. because of this, has now become the drag capital of the South. Literally, it is. It's like the largest
population of drag. Go ahead. Pause just a second. Georgia has always been the drag capital of the South. Thank you.
Well, it really
more
is
than
now.
New Orleans?
Right, well, Louisiana, when I say the South, I mean the Deep South. Louisiana is its own thing.
Damn straight.
It really is.
I don't even consider that the same as here in the Deep South. Like, it is its own thing.
No, it is.
Especially Savannah, Georgia. Like, that's the drag capital of the South right there.
There's a statistic out there that Georgia is benefiting from all that bullshit in Tennessee. It's much more colorful and got more glitter here now. I saw a hairspray last year. This performance of Hairspray, done all drag Hairspray came through. And I thought that was really cool. You know, they made it a little raunchier because you got to do that, right?
So, oh, yes.
I hope they come back through this summer. I haven't seen if they have. Though I do, speaking of drag, I do have Dina Menzel's follow-up. She was in Wicked. I have tickets to Wicked and the new person who's, I believe, they just won a Tony. Two Tonys were won by the first two non-binary people, and one of them's on the tour of Wicked, I think. Raven says she's got something from Portland.
Yes. So recently we lost the LGBTQ local celebrity, Walter Cole, who performed as Darcelle, and she was the oldest performing drag queen. At Darcelle's place where she used to perform, it's a little around the corner, July 10th through 12th. They're making an official attempt to break the Guinness World Record for longest drag show. And all the money that they would make, basically they're trying to raise $250,000 for the Trevor Project. So it's 48 hours straight of drag. And they'll get world record and all that money donated to the Trevor Project. So if you're in Portland, you already know where Vaseline Alley is or Stark Street downtown. That's where all the gay bars are. Darcelle's is just around the corner in Old Town / Chinatown. And the shows are always amazing. And I think it's going to be extra special this year because Walter's celebration of life just happened at the Keller Auditorium, and it was, like, packed. They don't even pack their operas, but they packed Darcelle's funeral. So I think it's going to be pretty amazing.
I love that there's an area of town known as Vaseline Alley.
Yeah.
Got it.
Oh, that's great.
That's one of the best names I've ever heard.
So, well, I mean, what else is, I mean, in the Los Angeles area, what do we got going on? I'm sure there's all sorts of stuff in the next month, the next week.
Well, we have the big stuff in WeHo already. Mariah Carey, Megan Thee Stallion, a whole bunch of big celebration, Pride in the Park events. But we do have something upcoming at Brain Dead Studios on Fairfax on June 25th. There's the film festival screenings. And there's a lot of good stuff. If you're a Derek Jarman fan, which I am a huge fan, I know he's represented there. I don't remember what all else is playing.
How far from Katz's Delicatessen is it?
Fairfax and that region ain't too far, so not too far at all.
That's what I would do. I would go there, eat a borscht, a cabbage borscht, and then I would go see movies.
Just I'm so a deep borscht man myself, but cabbage borscht
I usually
is
am,
cool.
I usually am too, but their cabbage borscht is one of the best, so that's why I want it. And then they have that bagel chips you can dip in it. So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
you know what I'm talking
and the
about.
Best pickles. Oh my, well, okay, we could do a whole show on Cantor's.
Oh my God, we could do the delicatessen. That's another episode entirely. I mean, though,
right?
I will say we mentioned that barbecue place earlier. They did a pastrami there. Oh, and that was really, really
Ooh.
Good. I had to like beg to get an extra piece from it. I ate mine so fast that I was like, I really want some more. So it was like, that was really, really good. Anyway, I digress. Nothing's happening in Georgia. So there will be. other than my evil genius will be in town. So I don't have any Pride events to report here. I wish I did. There is a balloon festival this weekend, and that'll be very colorful. So that's always the big kickoff of the summer here in Georgia is the balloon festival down at the race speedway. The summer, I mean, it's not just about Pride Month. This is also the beginning of concert season. And you mentioned Megan Thee Stallion and Mariah Carey. I'm sure there was a huge turnout for both of those things.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, he's not really drag though. He kind of has like similar hair. Like, he has huge hair, too, right? Robert Smith, let's talk about The Cure for a moment. How many here, including our guests, are fans of are we all fans of The Cure here? Or do some of us find them tedious? Yes?
When you're named Raven, it's a requirement.
Oh, okay. Well, that's true. I am not as huge a fan of The Cure as some people are, but I appreciate them. And was when I found out they were coming to town and Levy was going to be here, I'm like, all right, Levy is in School of Rock. Matter of fact, they're going to do a summer camp this summer and probably do summer, do modern rock. So I was like, okay, let's go, you know, coincidence, yes. and I was like, so I got some tickets. And so The Cure was the first one. So they silently creeped up and put a second show on and didn't tell anybody. I'm a nerd. I listen to NPR on my commute, so I don't listen to music. And they're like, and they just dropped a second show for The Cure. And I was like, oh my God. And oh, well, there is some, Pride Month stuff. Excellent. Nathan, you want to talk about it in a minute here, but The Cure, I wanted to talk about Aaron before we keep going about June's busting out over it. It really is. You just saw The Cure. How was the show?
I did. Well, I am a huge, huge fan, and they were pretty much tip top of my bucket list of bands that are still going, quite frankly. Back in the day, I listened to their shit all the time. I had cassette tapes in a boom box when I was driving my 1965 Ford Galaxy 500 around. I would seatbelt my boom box in and blast The Cure, among other things. So this was huge for me. I was a little worried that, you know, they would, because it's been a while, that they wouldn't sound the same. But Robert Smith sounded fucking amazing. The band sounded as good or better than they had from the things I've seen on TV live. And I'm such a fucking fan. I didn't even care what they played, but the set list was amazing. They did two encores. We were lucky enough. The one I saw in San Diego was the first time that they played Hot, Hot, Hot on this tour, and that was fabulous. And I am over the moon excited for their new album coming out shortly, because I fucking love the new stuff that they played.
Well, that's good to know. I knew that their new album, and I knew they were going to be doing new stuff at our show, so I'm pretty excited about that. So cool.
Yeah.
Evil Genius, well, I'm really hoping they get it. They are going through their goth phase, after all. They discovered punk rock. Well, I already introduced them, but they really, really discovered the Dead Milkmen as a fan, like, just a couple of weeks ago. That's a rite of passage for most, you know, teenagers at that age, you know.
No doubt.
So I'm really excited. I also...
Get there early. The Scottish band that's opening for them, the Twilight Sad, are also pretty fucking good. And Natalie liked them so much that we're going to get their stuff, and she's going to use it when she as background music when she's doing her art, she said.
They're called what again?
The Twilight Sad, which is not my favorite name for a band, but I still really enjoyed them and really liked their frontman.
Okay, we will take a note of that. I also have tickets, but before Cure, like next week on Tuesday, I have tickets to the Pixies. I have never seen the Pixies live.
Fuck yeah.
There's no the. Get real.
Huh?
Oh, there's no the. It's just Pixies.
It's just Pixies?
Yeah.
Okay. I have never seen Pixies. How's that? You know, unfortunately,
so weird. That's what people always had. The it's so funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, I still have never. I've seen Frank Black and during his Teenager of the Year. Is that the name of the album? He opened for They Might Be Giants.
Oh yeah.
He opened for They Might Be Giants that year. He was okay. I think he's better at like the band. But I've never seen the actual band itself live. So I'm pretty excited to see the Pixies.
That's amazing.
All Pixies. And Levy's coming with me on that one. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to sit through Franz Ferdinand to get to them. I really wished Weezer was playing. That would be cool. And after The Cure, we have The Eels is coming to town.
Ooh.
At the Variety Playhouse, where I saw John Waters a few weeks ago. Speaking of Pride Month and John Waters, I fucking love him.
Yeah.
John Waters is my hero. He really is. He's really one of my heroes.
If you've never seen one of his spoken word performances, you should. He's great.
So good.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's so weird. I lived outside Baltimore for 20 years and could not get tickets. I've come here, and within a year, I have tickets. we almost
right on. I was going to go see him at the Madonna Inn for an Easter show, and it got canceled. And John Waters at the Madonna Inn would have been amazeballs.
Oh my
but
gosh! Janessa, do you know about the Madonna Inn?
I do. My friend Brooklyn, who does a lot of my photography, she's from West Virginia, but she goes on these like nationwide road trips and just schedules shoots at little like fun Airbnbs and stuff. And every once in a while, she stops at the Madonna the Madonna Hotel. Is that what it's called?
Madonna
Inn.
It's
the Madonna Inn.
The Madonna Inn.
It's
yeah.
The Madonna Inn. Yeah. But it's big. It's not like a small thing.
It's crazy. Like, beautiful. Like she finds these like fun places and like the theme rooms and stuff, and she takes all the photos. And we've talked about trying to meet up there because I'm in North Dakota, so I'm far away from anything fun. And so we've talked about meeting up there at some point.
Nice. That's where my parents had their honeymoon.
Wow.
It looks so gorgeous.
Which room?
It's so fun.
They had two rooms. The first night they were in the cave room, and then the next night they were in the buffalo room, which my mom hated because there were like buffalo heads on the wall. But when you looked outside, you could see bison. And it's really weird because when you're outside, you can't see bison. And so there was like a weird bison mystery as to how the hell they made that happen. But if you go on the website, there's pictures of every single room. There's like 180 of them or something insane.
Yeah.
And they're all different.
The famous jungle room. And then there's the one that's in the cave. It has the water fountain. A waterfall shower.
That's where my parents stayed their first night.
Yeah, and then
have a horror film for the madness that took place at the Madonna Inn?
Oh wow!
Or was that just something that I watched?
I have no idea.
If not, we should.
Yeah,
I
must have watched
also,
that separately, but I thought it was for the madness.
Solvang is not too far from there, Nathan. That's the Dutch city I was talking about when we were in Helen.
Speaking of Helen, and you were talking about Buffalo Heads, this has nothing to do with anything, but the place that we stayed over the weekend, one of the coolest decorations I've seen anywhere ever, it was a deer head painted in a checkerboard pattern with gold leaf antlers. It was the most bizarre and fucking awesome decoration I've seen in forever.
It was like Lynchian. It was kind of cool. Yeah, it was very weird. And they called it, that we complimented the owner, and they called it, yeah, it's cool and bougie. And I'm like, well, you didn't think it was bougie. We thought it was like Lynchian or Gothic, you know. Grant, we both know what Grand Forks, North Dakota is like, Janessa. But there is some positives there. One is the river is really pretty. I helped that town recover during the, what was it, the 97 floods? Was that it?
The 97 flood, yep.
I was there for that. I literally was up my boobs in pig shit at one point.
Yeah, that was my freshman year of college, and I'm so dumb. So I'm coming out of the farm, and I go to college, and it's my first year, and I think I need to get a job. So I'm looking around at the work study jobs, and I'm like, oh, why don't I get a job doing news and weather at the campus radio station? And then it turned out to be a year where we had 8 blizzards that had names, and then this 500-year flood. And so I was in town like 24 hours after the mandatory evacuation because most of the radio stations are all downtown where the river is. And our campus, we have like a little coulee that runs through there that overflowed, but it didn't take out our tower. So we were still broadcasting through the flood. And so they got special permission for me to stay there. And I had to walk on pallets through the floodwater to get to work every day.
So you're telling me, because I was in the gym with the Red Cross, we were about 30 feet from each other and didn't know it.
Yeah, probably, because I'm guessing you were probably at the Hislop, so you were probably like 2 blocks away from where our building was.
We were in like this little, we were in this gym thing. It was kind of flat, if I remember right, and it had like a weird little kitchen. And then I was staying up in Halleck with another team. We had left one team there, I drove up to Halleck, Minnesota, which is famous for its grain elevator, not much else. I helped with everyone's, levees and stuff there. It got hit pretty bad. Our team was covered in pig shit and wood ticks. It was one of the toughest months of my life was helping clean up after that flood. So I actually have rather fond affection for Grand Forks because of all of that. So I'm sorry that what happened to you, but I think it's important what you're doing up there because we need people with, representation matters. And, when we were in Halleck for the first time, we had 2 African-American persons with us, right? And they were good friends, and they were we were all talking on the corner. And a person drove up to us and was very, very earnest, was like, we've never seen 2.
What?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
That sounds like rural Minnesota, North Dakota.
Yep. And we had 2 lesbian, we had a lesbian couple with us too, and that blew their minds. But they were still very nice to us. They took good care of us because we were cleaning up and we were doing some terrible work, right? So they used to bring us all this food, like constantly. Like if the sun doesn't set up there, like it's 11 o'clock, there's still sunlight. People are knocking on our door, and they're like, "Hey, we were making some cinnamon rolls. Would you like one?" And they're like, "Yes, bring them in." So I have a real fond affection for that area in some ways, because of all that.
Yeah.
I had my first bloodsucker on me at the lake around the corner from Halleck. I never had a leech on me before. That was a cool experience. Yeah, leeches, ticks, pig shit. It was a rough
No thanks. All that kind of
Yeah, it was terrible. Oh. And our our campus group, the woman who was in, she was like our faculty advisor, she and her partner, I just remember that they went down to like the sandbagging station. Because the thing with that flood is that for like since February, the meteorologist in Fargo was like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be terrible. And nobody believed him. And so the sandbagging effort was really kind of lackluster. And so then as it got closer and closer and closer, people are like, yeah, we should fill some sandbags. And finally it was getting a little bit more intense. And so they went down there and it was so disorganized. And like her partner just like hopped on a forklift and they're like ordering people around. They just like took over from the city. And so then when everything went down, she was like, we did what we could. I don't want to hear any jokes about unstable dikes.
Nice.
Well played.
That's excellent.
That's so good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that, you know, we're tough as nails, all of us in this circle here. We've gone through a lot. We'll get through this, too. And there's still a lot of fun and joy to be had out there. The summer's going to be fun. There's a lot of good movies coming out, especially in the horror genre. And also, Janessa, I wanted to let you know that we announced our Madness theme for the Halloween this year, our last episode, and it's vampires. And so I'm going to ask you what your favorite vampire movie is, because I'm sure you have one, maybe two or three.
Well, so unpopular opinion, I actually really enjoyed Tim Burton's take on Dark Shadows. I've been a Dark Shadows fan for a long time.
I didn't know you were going to go directly Dark Shadows.
I love it. I love Dark Shadows so much.
Same.
And I understand why some fans really didn't like it because of some of the changes they made. And I mean, they were trying to take what was a daily show for 5 years and put it into 90 minutes. So
right. You're
going to have to pare down. There's going to be sacrifices. And so I thought, but I just thought I loved the art direction and the coloring. I mean, Helena Bonham Carter as Julia Hoffman, the only person who could have played that better would have been Grayson Hall. I mean, I just think she was so good. So of course that's a favorite. I love Blackula. I think Blackula is just so fun.
It is. It's a great movie.
I'm such a fan of Blackula. And the sequel, of course, with Pam Grier. Absolutely fabulous. Those are definitely some favorites. Dracula's Daughter. I mean, going way back old school.
Yes.
For some queerness for pride. I love Dracula's Daughter.
Dracula's Daughter is actually one of my favorite Universal horror films. About it is so good. The lead performance is incredible. The atmosphere, the tone, it's so, you know, vampires are relatively tragic by nature, but that movie is downright just the tragedy just wears itself on its sleeve in such the most beautiful poetic way. I really, really love that movie. So
yeah,
I'm so glad.
It's so good. And I love that, like that main actress, it's almost like to have to remind her, like, this isn't a silent movie. Because she has those moments where she just sort of stares, and then all of a
Eva
sudden,
Green.
And she'll talk, and she's great, but then she just kind of does those long, longing stares. So good.
Yeah, well, she's a vampirist of the nth degree.
Yeah.
You know? So I really like that one, too. Is there any modern ones do you like?
I think they get, some of them, they get too much into the, like, big teeth, like 30 Days of Night, like that style of vampire I'm not really into, and I'm much more of the classic sexy vampire. I love what AMC did with Interview with a Vampire. I think that show is very cool. I love a sexy vampire. I want a vampire to be sensual. I mean, that sort of the intimacy of the bite and everything. I don't need big, like, sci-fi teeth and all that. So I just love a good sexy vampire.
Well, I mean, then there's Klaus Kinski, who makes the scary monster sexy. I've always
Klaus
been amazed.
Kinski is just Klaus Kinski is the scary monster in and of himself.
Well, he is absolutely. Yeah. And Werner Herzog's Nosferatu, which is one of my favorite vampire movies of all time, like he is emoting, oozing sex through this like terrifying makeup. Like, how does he do that? You know, it's like, you know, it's incredible. We going back to sexy vampires though, you know, we're in the madness this year. Gene Roland movies are going to play a prominent part of the madness. And there's a lot of Euro trash in there with vampires, a lot of it. So, and that's like all of us agreed in to Euro trash. Raven wants to curate a Euro trash list, and Nathan wants to do a Euro trash watch party. They'll have to collaborate, make sure that, you know, some of it can overlap. It can absolutely overlap, actually. So there's a lot of sexy vampires. We'll definitely, and yeah, we're actually, that's our angle. Even though I appreciate the monster vampire as well, I like the Reapers from Blade 2 in particular. I really thought were cool. Mm-hmm. You know, but this year's vampires, the ones we're focusing on the most, are going to be Dracula and Anne Rice movies, or Anne Rice books and movies.
Nice.
We're actually covering books too, because I mean, nobody does a sexy vampire or a sexy book for that matter better than Anne Rice did. So, I mean, she kind of like invented her own a subgenre that people just ripped for the rest of their lives. I mean, it, like Lestat became canon in so many things. Like, you can, it even, you know, even like shows that aren't really about vampires, like Supernatural, and you know, you can see influences there. You know, it's everywhere. You know, Dracula pops up all over the place if you look. I mean, I was looking. We were talking about Dracula episodes, and we found one. Where did we find one weird one?
Oh, Spider Woman.
Spider Woman. Okay. And I often point out the Dracula episode in Buffy in season 5, which is like,
oh,
the
yeah.
rest of season 5 is deals with some kind of hot, sexy demon woman, but there is a Dracula. my favorite sexy Dracula. I agree with you. Like, well, someone's giving me pictures. But I also am a huge fan of comedies and stuff. And What We Do in the Shadows is probably my favorite thing right now. Like, it's not just like TV show thing. Like I love that. It's the only show I really watch live with commercials other than wrestling. So that's it. But wrestling is a sporting event, kind of, so you kind of want to watch it live if you can. Great thing is, it's not really a sporting event, so if you miss it, you can go back and watch it. We just watched something brutal yesterday. Vampire, matter of fact, what was that? We just saw a trailer for and had a vampire wrestler in it, Nathan?
What? Oh, so last night, just because I wasn't ready to go to sleep yet, I didn't really want to put anything on. I just went to Amazon Prime and just put in vampire movies and went down a rabbit hole. And I found one that Vampiro, the wrestler, the luchador, made back in 19, was it 90 or 91?
Something like that.
Something like that, called like Vampire, the Devil's Warrior, or something like that. It looks so bad, and oh my god.
And it was
god,
dubbed.
I, like,
the dubbing was like,
the dubbing is
oh
terrible.
My.
The dubbing is like sub Godzilla level. And that is absolutely on the watch list for the madness this year.
Now, going
nice.
Vampires, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because, you know, we've got preview here and Pride Month and everything. Obviously, there's a lot of metaphor for the other in vampires. And I don't even have to go into the metaphors. If you are listening to the show, you understand. You know, there's also coming up a big horror film release. We get a Dracula. We finally get The Voyage of the Dementor this summer.
Demeter,
which is something I've been wanting pretty much all my life, because Dracula was one of the first books I, like, owned. Like, I still own my mom's copy. It's on the bookshelf in the living room right now. That chapter always intrigued me. The one where he's on the boat coming to London. And they never do it. They always gloss over it. Except for the only time you really see any provenance to it that I can think of would have been probably the original Nosferatu. There's a couple of really good sequences on that ship. Right, some of the most iconic imagery is from that sequence.
No doubt.
But Yeah, so how do the other people feel about this movie? Because I don't know. I think the trailers look great. I've been waiting for it forever.
I'm super excited. I love how the trailer was cut. You know, Dracula is a really short novel. You can read it in an afternoon if you really are determined. And I think one of the most interesting parts is the captain's log, because the book is all a series of letters mostly. And this feels like, you know, you're reading something private, but like the captain's log part story in just such a different way. And I'm really curious to see, you know, how they go into it, because in every Dracula movie, it's, let's load the coffin onto the Demeter. Oh, the Demeter has arrived. You know, they don't.
And everyone's
dead. Right. And that's all we know. But in the book, you can figure it out because you're watching the captain's log. And I think it's a really interesting part that gets overlooked in many Dracula stories. So I'm super excited for that.
It's also, There's five horror films this summer that they say that are going to be hit movies. One did okay, is already out and did okay, and that was The Boogeyman, which came out last week,
yeah.
I believe. The new Stephen King movie. It did okay, didn't do amazing, but I have a feeling that film's going to have legs, and we're going to see it around for a while. You know, it might be one of those. Especially because it's a Stephen King stamp of approval. The new Insidious is going to make a fuck ton of dough, whether you like them or not. I have mixed bags about it. The Red Door, which I know nothing about, but that's supposed to do really well. A film that Nathan's been talking about for a while, Talk to Me, comes out, and the trailers look kind of interesting to that.
The trailers look really interesting for that one. It's an A24 movie, so even if it sucks, it'll at least be well made. But the trailers to this movie look like, because honestly, supernatural ghost horror is almost my least favorite genre. But this one looks I like monsters and stuff like that. But this looks like a ghost movie that I can totally get behind, because I get a feeling that I know the angle they're taking, and I really dig it.
Yeah.
And those are, with the Last Voyage of the Demeter, that's actually, those are just the theatrical releases. Streaming is going to go crazy. The one thing that came out last week that I wish I had Screenbox for, Nathan, we were talking about this earlier, the Robert Englund documentary dropped. On
Screenbox.
I really wanted to see that.
I was supposed to get a photo with him at Monsterpalooza, and he got COVID, and he had to cancel.
I saw the video he posted about that.
I was crestfallen.
Speaking of representation, not Pride Month, but, you know, I would have to say that, you know, no matter how you feel about Jordan Peele, it's opened a whole new group of people that are now allowed, like, a huge, amazing amount of great directors and actors and stuff now have opportunities they didn't have before. Thank you for that. And an angry black girl and her monsters coming out, and then there's another film, African-American horror film coming out, which is a comedy. Do you remember?
Yeah.
What's
Blackity,
the name of it?
Right?
Huh? Yeah, The Blackity. That's coming out this summer.
And it looks awesome.
That's coming out Friday.
Friend of the show, and we're all a huge fan of him, even if you don't like his movies. I like him. Ted Geoghegan, who directed Mohawk and the really deep, really, really good ghost movie, We Are Still Here, with Last Besseden. His new film dropped this week as well. It's called Brooklyn 45. It's on Shudder. So I would recommend checking it out. The Blackening comes out Friday, by the way. There's a bunch of Shudder has been going for the indie films Screambox goes for the Asian horror, and so they're about to drop a bunch of new Asian horror on Screambox. So if you're into surrealist body horror, they got you covered, just so you know.
Sold.
And then here's a question I have, and I've noticed something watching all these B-movies, and I watched that documentary about that video company up in New Jersey, and there's a movie
Wave
coming
video.
Out, yeah, called Quicksand. It coming out.
No, the documentary was called, Murder for Hire, I believe.
Yeah.
It's about a company that the DVD of the documentary is available from Vinegar Syndrome, and you could send them a script and a certain amount of money, and they would make your movie.
What?
And a lot of them were like. A lot of them are like quick. It was nominated for a Chainsaw last year. A lot of them are like there's this like whole subgenre of quicksand films that were really popular for a while, and now they kind of fall off. Well, now they're doing a new one. There's a big mainstream release called Quicksand, and so I was reminded of that. That comes out in Shudder. And here's the plot. Nathan, you better hold on to your butt. You ready? I don't know. Janessa, I don't know how you feel about snakes, but he really, really doesn't like them.
Oh, no.
I'm not a snake fan. I'm not a snake fan.
You and me both.
An American couple on the brink of divorce traveled to Colombia for a work conference. Okay, that's a pretty basic horror movie setup. The couple get caught in a storm that leaves them trapped in a pit of quicksand. The elements, venomous snakes, and more ensure a brutal fight for survival. Oh, The Red Door is Insidious. Okay, never mind. That's what happened.
You had me till snakes.
I know. I was like, venomous snakes.
But the combination of quicksand and snakes brings me to the movie I am least looking forward to watching this summer, but I know I'm going to end up watching it, and that is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. It's a funny phenomenon with that movie because none of us are looking forward to it, but we're all going to go see it.
Whoa. I just discovered they are remaking Cube.
In Japan, right? I've been waiting for it to come out. It's supposed to be out a couple years ago.
Oh, I guess it came out. The Blu-ray comes out. It says a video on demand on Screenbox. It was released in April, and then the Blu-ray comes out in 2 days.
There's a game show called The Cube that they keep advertising when we're watching wrestling. I'm like, no, I'm not going on a game show called The Cube. I've seen that movie. No, thank you.
I always yell, what? Those traps are nothing. That's what I keep saying.
No, thanks.
Did you know did you ever see Alexander Aja's movie Crawl about the alligators in the basement? It's not bad. There's a sequel coming out called Flood.
I saw that.
Yeah, so that's coming. I was kind of surprised at that. So, you know, that's cool. Let's see, and then of course the big kids movie of the summer is going to be Haunted Mansion. The real question is, I think I'm going to go see it because I want to see the art direction.
The trailers have got me cautiously optimistic about that one.
Fingers crossed.
I mean, the cast is solid. But then again. You could have said that about the Eddie Murphy one, right? I mean, the Eddie Murphy one had potential. I like that little. It didn't work. It had potential. It didn't work. But I did like that Muppet show. There was a Muppet special. That was actually pretty cool.
That was cute.
So.
Kirk Thatcher directed that.
And then Talk to Me, it comes out the same day as that, just so you know. So that's July 28th for Talk
to Me. That's a worthy double feature right there.
That was Symphony for the Devil. Nick Cage has not one film over the top this summer. He had two with Renfield, right? So he had played Dracula. Here we go. Major vampire movie, right? He's also playing Satan this year.
Honestly, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the only thing that surprised me about that is it has taken this long for someone to cast Nicolas Cage as Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's called Sympathy with the Devil, I believe, right? For the Devil. Sympathy for the Devil. So, and it's actually getting a theatrical release, but it's getting one of those, you know, simultaneous ones, but it's also on VOD at the same time. Now, and then there's also the weirdest, the absolutely weirdest combination I have ever heard in my entire life when it comes to a horror movie director. who thought of this? And it makes me actually want to go see it, even though the original movie is mediocre. Meg 2: The Trench. Okay, big shark movie for the summer. We all love our shark movies for the summer. But the director is Ben Wheatley? Really? Ben Wheatley. Like fucking Ben Wheatley. And, you know, who he did Kill List. He did Sightseers, A Field in England, which is, like, this really weird movie. And then he did High Rise. And his last film was a pseudo-horror film called In the Earth, which actually I kind of liked. It's hard to explain what that movie is. I saw it the same day I saw Censor, which were another English horror film. Both of those films ended up being kind of a really good double feature. But all those films, Kill List is a pagan movie. Sightseer is a road trip from hell movie. Field in England is just trippy. High Rise is an adaptation of a book that was supposed to be undirectable, unfilmable, but he did it anyways, and he gave us a naked Tom Hiddleston. Thank you, Ben. he did a remake of Rebecca, and then he did In the Earth. None of those films tell me giant fucking shark movie. None of those. So
yeah, that's bizarre.
It really is. Like, I love Ben Wheatley. What the heck? So I'm so curious. I'll probably end up going to see it. If it's at the drive-in, for sure going to go see it. So that's one thing I love about the summer is the drive-in. Going to the drive-in, I really miss the Benji's up in Maryland. We had a really cool vintage drive-in. There's quite a few within driving distance of here. The closest one is Starlight, which is way famous, but it's not as cool as it used to be. New owners don't have the love that they have. I love going to see any movie at the drive-in. I have a very low bar when I'll go see it at a drive-in. But I would love to, but I don't actually like to go see a lot of horror movies at the drive-in because they're too dark. If the moon is bright, forget it. You're not going to be able to see anything at all. I went to see Interview with a Vampire when it came out new, and I couldn't see anything when I went to see it at the drive-in. The whole back half of the movie takes place in the bowels in France. Forget it. I couldn't see it. I'm so glad I saw it before. it's okay. On the other screen was the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, so I was watching that too. The Robert De Niro one. No, I'm
Robert
sorry,
De Niro is the monster.
Oh no, it might have been the Kenneth Branagh one. I think it was the Kenneth Branagh one. Anyway,
Kenneth Branagh was the doctor.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, is it?
Kenneth Branagh was Dr. Frankenstein. De Niro was the creature.
The one with the eels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, that was what was playing on the other side, was that one. Okay. Tells you how long ago that was.
It was a while.
But Meg 2 is a perfect drive-in movie. Perfect drive-in movie.
Electric Boogaloo.
I would like to go see that. So.
I don't know if it's going to come out this year, but the worst part about Ty West recording X and Pearl at the same time is I feel like now we're having to wait forever for Maxine. That's the one I'm really looking forward to.
And you know what? We're going to have to wait longer while this writer's strike's going on. That's why they halted production. Because Ty West and Mia Goth are both in the Writers Guild. We have to wait. So who knows? I mean, if we'll actually ever get Maxine. I really, really hope we get him. Maybe they're writing on the side. And they'll just drop it all of a sudden, boom, like magic, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I will say that writer's strikes aren't always a bad thing, because last time we had one, we got Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which is one of the greatest things ever. Because there's a lot of actors and writers with a lot of time on their hands, like kind of like what happened with us in COVID. So they got stuff, they're doing things on the side while they're waiting. So there is some positivity to that, hopefully. But
yeah.
But they halted Maxine, which upsets me. But what really upsets me is halting Stranger Things. These kids aren't getting any younger. You know?
Amen.
And I really want him to finish that story, like, so bad.
And that's affected a lot of people I know personally that work on that show. So, like, you're in Georgia, you shut down Stranger Things, you're putting a halt to a whole bunch of jobs. So I hope it gets resolved quickly and to a satisfactory finish to everybody.
Hear, hear. Yeah.
Yeah. They did announce while we were driving up to the mountains that they're actually building a multi-million-dollar studio up there to draw business to the mountains. Because I learned about something today, and it actually kind of indirectly relates to the studio, is that Deliverance, which was shot not too far from where we were this weekend, did everything terrible to that area and killed tourism dead.
Wow.
Like Deliverance almost destroyed that area. And it took like literally a decade to recover. And so they're trying to encourage people to move there and more economy and stuff. Like, they're still recovering from Deliverance. And that was what, the 70s, early 80s? I had no idea. Now, saying that, Cocaine Bear and Blood Mountain's having the exact opposite effect. People are going to Blood Mountain. So... you know, that's a good thing, at least. So, people are afraid. They're afraid of Hicks, but they're not afraid of Cocaine Bears. Honestly, I would rather take on the guys with the banjos, than a Cocaine Bear. I mean, fuck that. You can, cocaine, go away.
I don't know, man. Having lived in North Carolina and Georgia my whole life, I think I'll take the bear.
It's funny. I had no idea how much of effect that movie had on 72. So I really, really did not know how much of effect Deliverance had on the economy of the Georgia, North Georgia mountains.
Well, if you think about it, movie tourism really wasn't a thing at that point.
No.
There wasn't a lot of going and seeing where stuff was filmed. Yeah. So people didn't think, ooh, let's go see where that was filmed. They just thought,
I don't want to squeal like a pig,
you know? So.
Yeah, they thought that that's what people in Georgia Mountains were. There's people making assumptions about people, people aren't like that. It is a movie. It's a fictional story, people. Not everyone's like that. Not everyone wants to rape poor Ned Beatty. We're not into that. He works with her. He would come after me. So I get all, see, in my brain, my kid's brain, like, mixes all that up, which is so weird. Like, I was like, what? Yeah, I saw Superman first, but then I saw Deliverance. I'm like, why is he being attacked, mommy?
Yeah.
That's North Georgia's tourism slogan for next year. Not everyone wants to rape Ned Beatty.
There you go.
But yeah, I just thought it was funny. I learned all of this recently. I was like, really? I had no idea. But yeah, so right now the writer's strike is really affecting what's going on down here as well. Now, luckily, there's a lot of things to do while we're waiting. There's lots of concerts, music, everything major comes through here. We have the Braves too, which is like a super big draw. I'm not really a baseball fan, but you can imagine because they're usually in first place or second. Everyone comes to see them. I'm actually much more interested in the Gladiators, which are a hockey team down here. I haven't seen them yet. But the Stanley Cup's on, by the way, I'm just making that as a document. I'm not watching it this year. Stanley Cup's on, finals, as we speak. Anyway, let's see, is there anything other than personal appearances that we need to talk about? Because the next thing would be personal appearances and what we're doing personally. Other than I talked about my concerts, but this isn't about me. It's about y'all. everything? Any movies?
I saw some stuff while we were off. I had a chance to see Ben Burtt at the Academy Museum. They just added a new exhibit on sound. And Ben Burtt, of course, was the sound designer on Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., a bajillion things. So he actually talked a great deal about Star Wars and then a little bit about the exhibit at the Academy Museum. And the exhibit's actually really fun. And I got a chance to shove one of my action figures in front of Mr. Burtt and have him sign it. That was cool.
Nice.
I finally attended the Scum and Villainy Cantina. I went on May the 4th Be With You, and that was pretty cool. And I got to see Carrie Fisher get her star posthumously on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, you said that a while back. That's really good. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I miss Carrie Fisher so much.
Here.
Oh, my God. She was like another hero of mine was Carrie Fisher. You know, she was my princess growing up.
We didn't have
Disney princesses in the mid-70s. They were doing that thing where they would release them in theaters for like 2 weeks, and if you missed it, you should have a look for a year or so, maybe even 5-10 years.
They would always put out the VHS, and it would be out for a little while, and then it would go back in the vault, and you couldn't get it for like 5 years or 10 years.
Yeah. That's what they were doing that with movies for a very, very long time as well.
And so
Star Wars, she was my princess. You know, Valeria, she was my princess. You know, my women were kicking some ass and taking names.
I want to say one thing about Disney princesses right quick, because I learned something this week that I did not know. Fox still owns the rights to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Technically, after the acquisition, Dr. Frankenfurter is a Disney princess.
Of course he is.
Absolutely. A queen.
On what basis? I don't understand that logic. Fox owns, like, whoever stars in a Fox movie is a Disney princess.
Well, now that Disney owns technically the whole thing. Like
98% of Fox.
Yeah, the Xenomorph is a Disney princess, but that's not nearly as interesting as Frankenfurter being one.
No. Because Xenomorph has a mother.
No. The mother is the queen, which means the next eldest egg is the Disney princess of Xenomorphs.
That's just science.
Okay. That's
because science.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so y'all are kind of right, but I'll tell you that if you watch, here's how I know that Fox and Hulu and Disney are all related. If you watch Prey from last year, which is a pretty good movie, take away the period trappings and just make it the plot, she's a Disney princess all the way. The story is Disney princess. She's misunderstood. She's really talented. Her parents,
dead
they
parents.
Underestimate her. Dead parents. Fighting a beast of incredible odds and becoming a leader of her tribe. Disney princess.
Headcanon accepted.
Yes. So I couldn't believe, I mean, it really, seriously, it's the most R-rated Disney princess film ever made. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is definitely a Disney film. it was what Mulan should have been. Let's put it that way.
I want a Mulan versus Predator movie now.
Ooh.
I mean, you have one.
Well, I mean, the live-action Mulan almost works, but it doesn't. It falls short, and I kind of wish it went. Like, they needed to change directors. Like, I think that a Chinese director would have done a lot better with that movie.
They needed more aliens.
Well, all movies need more aliens or drag queens, sometimes both.
Aliens
and drag queens.
Dude, I'm all about aliens.
I like
drag
the way
queens.
You think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we
no
got
reason
close
we can't
to
have
story.
Ewoks versus the Predator. Disney owns both.
Oh, hell yeah.
The teddy bears versus
short death from below.
Aww. I mean, would they
short
even take them seriously?
Short death from below. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So we're going to start with Janessa. You said you had some personal appearances. You're finally starting to go on beach route. So what do you have coming up?
Yes. So the big thing is just Bismarck Pride coming up this weekend. So we're going to be at the Belle Mayhew's Auditorium in Bismarck on Saturday night. Doors open at 7 and the show starts at 8. And we've got some of our best regional talent coming in for the show. And there's lots of other events. There's going to be a bowling night. There's going to be a vendor show on Saturday and some different things going on there. Otherwise, nothing else planned. I've had a couple feelers out. I might have a show coming up in Grand Forks pretty soon. I've got a couple things that might be coming up in Fargo, but you can always catch me usually every week a new video on my YouTube channel. So the next one that's coming out this week is going to be about, appropriate to our discussion tonight, is 10 Pride-appropriate horror films for you to enjoy this Pride month.
Ah, lovely. Make sure you tag me in the post so I can share it. So when you do drop it, absolutely. Cause thank you. And thank you for coming on the show. I hope someday we can see each other again in person because it feels like we don't get enough time. Because even when we're together, we're usually busy working or working it, depending on the situation. I mean,
exactly.
And Raven, so what do you have personal stuff? I know you have quite a few, especially for Pride Month.
Right. Well, the most coming up around the corner thing is on Sunday, June 18th at noon at the Backdoor Theater on Hawthorne in Southeast Portland. I'm directing a stage reading of a play I wrote called Sappho the Tenth Muse about one of the first queer poets in known history. And it is free. All tickets are Gay AF, which is Give As You're Able, friends. And this is for the Outright Festival, which runs all month all over Portland. Queer theaters and theaters that don't particularly do queer-focused stuff are in this festival spotlighting queer performers and queer playwrights and directors. So come check it out. You know, if you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. Only, you know, because it's free.
Wow.
All right, I'm afraid to throw it out to Aaron, but Aaron, what do you have for the summer?
What, me? I'm a shy retiring type. I've got nothing. Oh, okay, maybe one or two things. Let's see, next Wednesday at Revenge Of, which is an amazing comic book store in Los Angeles, the Collected Minor Threats signing with Jordan Bloom and Patton Oswalt is a not-to-be-missed nerd event. Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, Ron Funches are all doing comedy stand-up sets. There's going to be barbecue and the signing, and it's all free. You know, buy your comic and the whole thing's free. Also, you should be aware that Saturday the 24th at our beloved local, the Frida, the 40th anniversary director's cut of Videodrome plays at 8 o'clock. That is presented by Horror Buzz. So I really fucking want to be there. And July has way too many things. So we'll tell you about July in July.
Well, and, you know, Blobfest is in July, and they will have an association with Mystery Science Theater 3000 this year. Jonah Ray is going to co-add this character to the floor show, which will be awesome to have those worlds collide horror hosting. Hell yeah. And what are the dates for San Diego Comic-Con?
San Diego Comic-Con this year is going to be – oh, and I just found out that there's a superhero tea at 1 o'clock on preview night, so my plans are changing all the time. The 19th, Wednesday the 19th is preview night, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday the 23rd. And then that next week, Midsummer Scream starts on the 28th, 29th, and 30th.
So we will probably do a show. Yeah, well, it's training season for you. We'll probably do a show where we preview those two shows specifically. Probably in July at some point. So I just want to make sure that I knew those shows were coming up. So I want to make sure you mentioned it at least, so people know to listen and call in, maybe, or at least listen. So Mr. Nathan, bring this all home for us.
All right, ladies, gentlemen, everything in between. Deep South Wrestling has been quiet for some time. We've had some stuff going on internally, but we are ready to break back out and give you guys the show you all expect, the amazing spectacle you expect every time you come see Deep South Wrestling. Next Saturday, June 24th, we are going to be at Das Barbecue over on Memorial Drive in Atlanta. It is a free show. Free. My second favorite F word. And it's going to be an outstanding show. I want everyone to show. And if you're planning on going to Impact Wrestling that night, we will be over in time for you to make it over to center stage. So come out to Das Barbecue. Come see Deep South Wrestling. I promise you, you're going to like what you see. You're going to want to come back to every show that we do after that. And we have shows scheduled all throughout the summer, culminating in a big show that I am not allowed to talk about yet, but it is going to be an amazing show. But June 24th, we are making our grand resurgence at Das Barbecue at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 p.m.
Yes.
It's an afternoon show.
Three
p.m. Be there for all the action. And you can also catch me. I believe we have two episodes left in season two of Sell Your Soul, which is the podcast where me and my hetero life mate, Brad, discuss classic soul music and all the love we have for that kind of stuff. So if you want to listen to us talk about that wonderful, wonderful Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, the Stylistics, Marvin Gaye, all that kind of fun stuff, come catch us wherever your podcasts are, wherever you get your podcasts. Sell Your Soul. Check it out.
Nice.
Just Google Deep South Wrestling and Sell Your Soul, and whatever comes up, go to that.
Deep South Wrestling is a traditional promotion. It's not a death match promotion, if people are curious, because, you know, Nathan does both.
It's not IWA Deep South. It's just Deep South.
Yeah.
This is a school. There's a wrestling school out of South Georgia that Deep South Wrestling comes out of, and these are the top trainees out of the school. And what's great is these are not like the huge stars that you see on TV. These are the guys that are out to prove themselves. These are the ones that you're going to see on TV within the next few years.
Yeah,
like,
this is the pregame for the big leagues, kind of.
Yeah, this show is pretty legit. When you saw that great band at a small club show, and now they're playing arenas, that's kind of what this is. You can say you saw those wrestlers before they were on the huge stage. And wow. I can honestly say, and this covers a lot of ground, but from a purely in-ring standpoint, the just quality of the wrestling, Deep South Wrestling is the best promotion I work with, which is saying a lot. So you should definitely come and check the show out.
So to lead that, thank you all once again for being on the show. And I haven't set any new episodes, but I did want to talk about topics that we might think of. Obviously, there's going to be a vampire theme throughout the summer. I'm going to play vampire and vampire-related music as my outro for the rest of the season, up to the madness. So I have something queued up tonight, and really that's related to summer and horror for our outro. I also think, and Janessa, you're welcome to come to the show if you want to. We have never done one because I don't usually like doing this kind of thing, but we're going to do a Sexy Witch Round Robin. It's going to be a burn episode.
Ooh.
Yay!
I know you guys have been wanting to do a burn episode. We've never done a burn episode. Like I said, I don't like to diss on other people's pop culture unless it's really, 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 really awful. like QAnon awful. So, but there's sometimes you got to talk about a movie and just rip it to shreds, you know? So I was thinking maybe July or August we do one of those episodes. Nathan wants to do one on he wants to drop some music actually on the show, so we might do a episode of specifically about vampire music. There's so much out there to lead up to the madness, so maybe that'll be like the late August, early September, right before the show starts, before the madness starts. So we'll do
just for the record, on my computer, I just plugged in my drive that has all my music on it and searched the word vampire. It's currently at 300 songs and counting that it's found in the collection.
Wow.
So there's a shit ton of vampire music out there, folks.
Yeah, so there's that
what
going on.
What would you say is the decade that most of that music comes from?
Oh, God. Well, there's a whole lot of horror punk coming from the 90s.
Okay.
But as far as a lot of mainstream stuff, the late 80s and early 90s seems to be when a lot of the mainstream acts were really into vampires. So there's some good stuff coming from that era, too. I'm going to have to do some deeper digging into this. There's interesting fields to be mined for that.
I have a guest in mind for that episode. His name is Evil Gem. He works for he's in the band Elzig, which is the Elvis impersonator Danzig clone band that does rockabilly and mother
and the best guitar player that I know.
And Evil Jim wrote two books that about novelty novelty Halloween singles and albums, and I happen to have copies of them. They're here. So I was thinking of having him on to talk about vampire. I'm sure he has a bunch of vampire stuff up his sleeve. So I think I have to ask him, but I think it's a good idea. I think we've been talking about having Evil Jim on for a while. I think it's time to bring him on. So
Evil Jim will have stuff that none of us have ever heard of. I guarantee you.
You know, Evil Jim is one of the Days of the Dead family, is where I met. I already knew Nathan online, but we really bonded over Days of the Dead. I mean, he hired me, for crying out loud. I met Janessa that same show. I met Evil Jim that same show. You know, and now I live near two of them, and I feel very close to all of them. And thank you once again for making my life colorful and having great, wonderful friends. Especially now with my new part of my mile. I won't go into which one, but I am having a milestone birthday in August. So, and I'm starting a whole new life and a whole new summer. Thank you all. We're going to leave tonight with Jan and Dean because it's the summer. Got to bring in some Jan and Dean. And this is, what is it called? It is
Surf and Hearst.
Surf and Hearst. Do we know anything about this song?
Nice.
Yeah.
I know nothing about it. I just love the hell out of this song.
Okay. I don't know anything about it. It's Jan and Dean and Jan and Dean rules. And once again, thank you, Janessa, for being on the show. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, Raven.
Yep.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank
you all for listening. If you're out there, we all appreciate you. I love you. And once again, we're leaving tonight with Jan and Dean. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. And maybe even the evil genius will call in on the next one. Who knows? Mm. So have a good one. Bless the beast. Good film hunting. Good night.